Morning, do you wish to reserve any of your 15 minutes for rebuttal?
Yeah, 1 minute, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may, counsel, you may begin whenever you're ready.
Okay. Your Honor, the final decree of divorce in this case was entered in 2011. At that time, the parties agreed that the husband would pay the wife $4,350 a month in spousal support. The husband filed a motion to amend in 2013. In that motion, he alleged that he lost his job through no fault of his own, that he had back problems, and that he couldn't work. After a trial, that motion was denied. His doctor didn't support many of his claims. There were private investigator videos that showed that he was not disabled. And he was ordered to pay $21,000 in attorney's fees. That case was appealed to this court. It was affirmed in 2015. And then Mr. LaBrie filed again in 2016. And in that motion, he said the same thing, that he lost his job through no fault of his own, that he had back pain, that he couldn't work. It's important to note that the first case was decided by Judge Campbell. The second case was decided by Judge Johnson. Judge Johnson said he took the two motions, put them side by side, and in his words, they almost read word for word. I filed a response in the second case saying that the...
Does it matter that the motions are word for word if the actual underlying facts are different?
Probably not, but I think an indication that the facts are the same is that the motion was the same.
Wouldn't the motion always be the same hypothetically in any case when you're trying to petition for relief of a particular, whether it be spousal or child support, and the motion's going to be the same, it's just that the facts, we hope, will be different as far as the circumstances.
Well, and I could see that that's certainly true if the motion is very general, but this motion was more specific. He mentioned where he was working at Altria, that he had lost his job through no fault of his own, that he talked about his back pain. There were more facts in there than just there's been a change in circumstances.
In this second one that he filed, he also points out that he has, in fact, looked, or he alleges that he has, looked repeatedly and applied repeatedly for work, and that all over the country, he's been in a number of places, Minneapolis and different places, but nevertheless that he's looked for employment, which was not the case in the first petition. Am I correct?
Well, in the first petition he had applied for two jobs. He had applied for more than two jobs in the second case. So I acknowledge that
not asking you to concede that he is involuntarily unemployed at the time of the second motion. But if one moves from voluntarily unemployed to involuntarily unemployed by diligently looking work, the court says you didn't even look, now you go and you look everywhere and you literally can't find a job. By definition, isn't that a material change in circumstance?
I think so. I don't think those are the facts. But I want to address the excluding of the transcript issue, but I want to jump to this issue because whether there's been a material change and whether he showed that he is voluntarily or not voluntarily unemployed, I think that issue became a lot more clear in the briefs than maybe even it was at trial. In brief, husband admits he had two burdens of proof in both trials. He had to show that he lost his job through no fault of his own, and he had to show that he did not remain voluntarily unemployed after he lost that job. It's important that he acknowledge both of those things, and I agree with that, and I argued that all along. Now, the trial judge, for some reason, ruled that he didn't have that first burden, but he admits on brief he did have it. The trial judge said that... That issue wasn't even raised in his motion, and the trial judge said they didn't present any evidence on it. That's partially correct. He did raise it in his motion, and he tried to present evidence on that at trial. On pages 305, 306 of the appendix, he started on direct examination. The husband started to try to explain why he lost his job. And he started to make reference to a letter. And I objected on hearsay grounds, and that was sustained. The next question was, well, were you fired or did you quit? And I objected again. And I was interrupted, and before I could even finish my objection, the judge said, Mr. Ewing's point is well taken that this matter has been heard. Well, I mean, that's That is correct. Now, it's interesting that Judge Johnson didn't know what the decision was on that issue because he wouldn't look at the transcript. But it had been heard. And at the first trial, that whole issue had been presented. And I cross-examined the husband on that. And he admitted that part of the reason he lost his job was because of his condition, his back condition. He admitted that he wasn't going to work at times. He admitted he would go to lunch and not come back. And he admitted that he wasn't doing a good job when he was there.
May I interrupt you? You talk about the transcript, but doesn't the court speak to its orders? And wasn't there an order? As a matter of fact, there was a letter opinion and also an order entered from, I believe it was Judge Campbell?
Yes.
From Judge Campbell's court. So isn't that what we need to be looking at? And isn't that what the judge that heard this case actually reviewed?
Well, that is what Judge Johnson in the second case ruled, that courts speak through its orders. I cited cases in the brief where that's not always the case. This court has looked to the judge's comments on the record to interpret their orders. And it's interesting that this is not the first, this case has been here before. And in the first case, this court looked to what Judge Campbell said about whether the husband still had the ability to pay. He still had some assets, and under the Driscoll case, does he still have the ability to pay? And so this court looked to that and ruled based upon his words in the transcript, his explanation. Well, it's interesting that the quote in the first trial did not come from his letter opinion, wasn't in there anywhere. And it didn't come from the order, wasn't in there anywhere. In regard to the court ruling through or speaking through its orders, Judge Campbell's ruling is contained in one paragraph. The first sentence of that paragraph says that the husband failed to prove that his inability to pay spousal support did not result from his own voluntary act. Well, the husband argues that voluntary act is not looking for enough jobs, and that it wasn't the voluntary act of not going to work and getting himself fired. That ignores what Judge Campbell said at the end of the trial. Judge Campbell said, why should she have to suffer because he gave up a job? He didn't get fired. He gave it up. It can't be more clear than that.
Counsel, that's not in the record. That's not in the order. And that's not specifically delineated in his opinion. I understand exactly what you're arguing, and I understand what you want us to do. When you filed your motion, did you attach the transcript when you filed your motion? I guess that was at the end of the trial. I know there was a transcript that was included. You know, we've all read the record a number of times. Right. It's a complex case in a way.
The way that happened was I started talking about that in opening statement, and counsel objected, saying that it's not relevant and the court speak through its orders. And so we had what basically amounted to an oral motion in limine at that time. And we argued the case and we cited cases, and the judge took a recess and went back and read the cases. And he came out and he ruled against me that he wasn't going to look at the transcript, wouldn't even allow me to talk about what happened about it in an opening. At the end of the trial then, I tried again to get him to do that. And at that point he said he was taking that under advisement, and he asked me to submit the transcript in a separate envelope, and I did everything he asked me to do. And then he ruled in his first letter opinion that he was declining that motion. He didn't believe he had to work to look at it. And again, he cited the same authority.
I don't want to take it too much of your time in reference to that, counsel.
Before I run out of time, I do want to address the res judicata issue. And then we're talking about claim preclusion. Before I want to come back to that first element. He admits in his brief that he had the burden of proving that he lost his job through no fault of his own, and he tried to testify to it. The judge would not allow him to testify to it, and there's no other evidence about why he lost his job at Altria. There's nothing in the current record. And he admitted in his brief he had to prove it, and he admitted that if he didn't prove it, his motion fails. I don't understand why it doesn't end right here. Judge Johnson said he didn't present any evidence on it, and that is true. So the motion should fail on that alone. Now, on the res judicata issue, we're talking about claim preclusion and issue preclusion. I want to talk about claim preclusion first, and that's under Rule 1:6. And the issue is, between the two claims, do the claims arise from the same conduct, transaction, or occurrence? Do they arise out of the same set of operative facts? And the husband says that there are new operative facts because he looked for more jobs. In the first case, he looked for two jobs. Here, he filed his motion in April of 2016. Between March of 16 and September of 16, he'd looked for 17 jobs, or he'd applied for 17 jobs. Case was tried in December. I acknowledge he applied for a few more jobs right before trial.
If you're right on claim preclusion, we have, in Judge Campbell's order, this court finds that Mr. Labrie's inability to pay spouse support is due to his own voluntary act by remaining voluntarily unemployed. If you're right, is there any way for him to fix that ever?
No. No.
So doesn't matter what he does from this point over, there will never be a material change in circumstance that entitles him to a reduction.
He has voluntarily left that job. I believe Judge Campbell ruled that he voluntarily left that job. I think that maybe he could get a new job where he was making that amount of money, then he could lose that job. And I guess he could go back to that point.
It seems to me your claim preclusion argument has to be your first answer, that no, it can never be cured, which seems inconsistent with material change in circumstances.
Well, but this is different. This is that it is res judicata. He has left that job.
But material change in circumstances is a well-recognized exception to res judicata, or the conversation we were having in one of the prior cases about Rule 1-1 would cover everything.
Well, I'm talking now about a case that I didn't cite in my brief, but I think in the Broadhead case, I believe the judge went back to a previous job that the husband had in that case, and whether he had lost that job because of his own fault, even though he had had some jobs after that. I haven't looked at that case in the last few days, but I believe those are the facts of the Broadhead case. But yes, that is what I am saying, exactly what I am saying. I believe that there are the same operative facts in this case. And the significant thing here is, in this case, even though he has stipulated that the judge has found that he doesn't have a back condition that prevents him from working, in the first case, he stipulates that. So he stipulates that the court has to assume that he can work. But in this case, his evidence doesn't match or doesn't honor his stipulation. He continues to say, he said this time, it took him a day to recover from flying to Virginia. He says that he can't stand up without pain medication. And this is the important part. He's not looking for jobs that require travel. Looking for sales jobs, but he doesn't want to travel. And he won't apply for a job if they require a drug test because he's taking pain medication. So looking at whether these are the same cases, whether they're arising out of the same operative facts, he's making the same claim. He is limiting his job search because of alleged disabilities, which we have proven to be false. Now, the Supreme Court of Virginia decided the Funny Guy case earlier this year, and they talked about that analysis being a practical analysis. And you're looking at the facts, and do they relate to the same time, space, origin, or motivation? And under the origin and motivation, in that case, they said that was a claim for damages. And they said, Funny Guy wants to be paid for its work. That's the summary. That's the summary of his claim. That was the claim in their first case, the claim in the second case. And it was barred by res judicata. Here, husband says he can't pay his spousal support because his back hurts. That's it. That's the first case and the second case. Now, in the first case, he limited his job search to almost nothing. Now he limits his job search to no travel and no drug testing. Well, that's an unreasonable limit when a court has found that you don't have a disability. He does not have a disability. The other issue that I raised is the issue preclusion. And again, that comes back to whether Judge Campbell ruled in the first case that he did not lose his job because of through no fault of his own. He lost it because he gave it up. Again, the court has to look at the transcript to decide that issue.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, David Knoll for David Labrie. Your Honor, this is simply a case of the issue of, has there been a material change in circumstances since the 2014 order? The order from 2014 that incorporated Judge Campbell's opinion letter is clear and on its face. I mean, Judge Campbell actually used the words, these are the findings. Counsel wants to bring in a transcript in which and ask that the court look at a number of statements that Judge Campbell made from the bench. But that's not necessary because the way that Judge Campbell drafted his opinion letter that's part of the order, he makes a finding that Mr. LaBrie, he failed to prove his inability to work was not the result of his own voluntary act. Three or four sentences later, the court finds and it defines Mr. LaBrie's inability to pay spouse support is due to his own voluntary act by remaining unemployed. That's what the court determined in 2014. You only look for a couple of jobs. You say that your disability keeps you from working. Well, the court found that his disability didn't keep him from working. And that's what the court found. The court heard a lot of evidence that day. But ultimately, when it came to making the decision, what was essential to the Judge Campbell's 2014 decision was that Mr. LaBrie was not taking any action trying to find work, claiming that he was disabled. And for lack of a better word, Judge Campbell says, I don't buy it. You can work. Go out and find a job. That's what happened in 2014. And then in 2016, we filed the motion once again, and it was not practically identical. And there were some sentences that were practically cut and paste. I'll admit that. But there were the two new allegations in paragraph 11 and 12 that he has made a significant job search and to no avail. Ultimately, by the time that went to trial, as you can note in Judge Johnson's opinion letter, he had searched for over 75 jobs to no avail. We've gone back and forth in the briefs in terms of res judicata, whether or not the transcript should be entered, but the trial court speaks through its orders. It's clear and unambiguous, and there's no reason to go back. Now, this court has also found that the trial court should be given deference in terms of interpreting its own order. It doesn't say that the same judge needs to interpret. It says the court, the Chesterfield Circuit Court, should be given deference to interpreting its order. And that's what Judge Johnson ultimately did. He read it, and on page 295, I believe, in the appendix, in which, yes, Judge Johnson, you know, goes on and says, you know, I may be a simple man, but it's pretty clear that I'm going to go with Judge Campbell's order, his decision. That was the time in which we objected to the transcripts coming in. And if I can't address the issue of whether or not the transcripts were properly introduced, that would be the time in which, once Judge Campbell made a ruling, and even though the ruling was not a clear response to my objection, either Mr. Knoll, it's denied, or Mr. Knoll, I'll allow it, he clearly stated that I don't need to look at anything else besides this 2014 order. And that would have been the time, based on this court's ruling as well as the Supreme Court's ruling, that the evidence, in this case the transcript, should have been offered into evidence contemporaneous with the ruling on the objection. And that would have been the time. But even if you don't think that Judge Johnson in the 2016 hearing was clear enough on his not allowing the transcripts at that time, and that would have been the time to offer it, at least before the conclusion of evidence, when the appellant, after their expert testified, after Mrs. LaBrie testified, at the very end, I believe on 299, is where the appellant said, no more evidence. At the very least, before evidence stopped being received, is when that would have been at least the last chance to introduce that transcript into evidence, and that would have been the time. Not only was the transcript a post-trial proffer, it was also an expanded proffer, because originally it was two specific sections at a few hours earlier in the hearing that the appellant wanted to introduce. Afterwards, it was the whole transcript. So not only was it a late proffer, it was an expanded proffer.
Well, counsel, may I interrupt you?
Yes, Your Honor.
In reference to the issue of res judicata, does the transcript have to be in the record for the court to be able to conclude whether the res judicata has occurred?
No, Your Honor. This court has clearly stated that a trial court may, it's not a shall, but it's a may look at whether or not we need to look at the transcript to determine the issue of res judicata. And I believe most, if not all, of the cases cited by the appellant are criminal in nature, in which typically the orders are not the same as in civil cases, in which, like as in Judge Campbell's letter opinion, is very thorough, very citing case law, citing facts that the court found that was essential to its order. In the criminal cases, typically it's either guilty or not guilty, and there's not typically findings of elements that were proven or not proven by the Commonwealth. And in those situations, I would agree, it would be helpful to go back when it's not clear and it's a one line or a simple paragraph of guilty or not guilty, to go back and look at and interpret what the trial court looked at and determined in order to come up with its final order.
And in reference to there, the Hunter case would be an example of where the court actually examined prior orders and also written opinions as opposed to a transcript in reference to res judicata. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Very good. Thank you.
And also dovetailing off of the res judicata, there are the operative facts are different. It would be different, Your Honors, if our motion simply said, 2 years later, he's still sick, he still thinks he can't work, he can't find jobs, he's still not looking because his back still hurts, his leg still hurts, and we came back, then all of the elements of res judicata in that situation, I believe, would have been met. But it wasn't. The operative facts are different. Based on Judge Campbell's order of 2014, the operative facts are different. He's been searching for work and cannot find work. Simple as that. And that's our position of why res judicata doesn't apply in this case.
Counsel, it has been alleged that you are required to prove that he lost his job, his first job with Altria, through no fault of his own. What is your position in reference to that? I realize we've been talking about the order of the court and the judge's opinion, and I know what it states.
I would respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor. We have to show a change in circumstances from the 2014 order. There was no finding back in 2014 or prior by Judge Campbell of whether or not he was fired. There were a number of things, as I said earlier, that Judge Campbell stated from the bench, if you look at the transcript. Whether or not you left the job, a number of times we should go out in the hallway and try to settle the case, a number of times mentioning about whether or not there's assets to be available for him to continue to pay the award. There's also a section in there in which there's a quick back and forth between me and Judge Campbell in which he says, so he was...
He asked if you're familiar with folks who work or have had clients who work at Altria, or I guess the prior name of the company before he came out there.
Right, and another time where the judge said he got laid off, and I answered, and he got laid off, and the judge said, okay. But none of those things that were stated from the bench were actual findings of the court. None of those were essential for the 2016 order. Your Honors, it simply comes down to the order is clear and unambiguous. There are times in which a trial court should be given deference of whether or not to, based on the deference to interpret its own order, whether or not to go back and look at the transcript. And in this case, Judge Johnson decided it wasn't necessary, that it was clear and unambiguous, and you don't need to go any further back. We showed that there was a change in circumstances since the last order. Judge Campbell heard all of the evidence, the experts, the witnesses, and ultimately determined that based on what has changed over the last 2 years, there's a change in circumstances. And essentially, if you look at the record, essentially took both experts' opinions in terms of imputing income and essentially came up with an average, imputed Mr. LaBrie with that average, and based on the change in circumstances, lowered the award to $2,000 a month. For those reasons, Your Honor, I ask that the court affirm the trial court.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
He can't have it both ways. He can't have it both ways. In his brief, page 18, he states, in both 2014 and 2016, if husband failed to establish both, he put it in bold, both, that his loss of employment and, he put it in bold, his inability to obtain new employment were through no fault of his own, his motion would be denied. That's in his brief. Judge Johnson, in the second case, ruled, stated in his letter opinion, that that was never addressed at trial. I have cited the two questions that came up at trial about why he lost his job. Both were objected to. Both were sustained. There's no evidence. There's no evidence in the second trial about why he lost his job. He can't show a change in circumstances on that first element. One, nothing had changed. But two, he didn't present any evidence. And that has to be the end. That has to be the end of it.
Thank you, counsel. We'll come down and greet counsel.